from the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated radio show and podcast produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio and broadcast on 39 stations across Canada and many more around the world. I'm John Steinman, and today marks the 160th episode of the show, and which happens to come at a time of the show's fourth birthday. On January 5th, 2006, we aired our first ever broadcast titled Why Deconstruct Dinner, and over the past 4 years, I think it's safe to say that the show has continually answered that question with every one-hour broadcast we've produced to date. Similar to last week's episode on today's show, we listen in on more recordings from the annual convention of Canada's National Farmers Union. In late November 2009, the NFU gathered in Ottawa and hosted, among others, a panel of young farmers to help launch the union's campaign for new farmers. We'll hear from Laird, Saskatchewan's Kalissa Regeer, the NFU's new youth president. We'll hear from Hillary Moore, a young farmer who operates the Teamwork Community Supported Agriculture, or CSA, program in Almont, Ontario. And we'll dip into the NFU convention archives and listen to an excellent talk delivered at the union's 2008 convention featuring Spain's Paul Nicholson. Paul is a member of EHNE, the Basque Farmers Union, and a member of the International Coordinating Committee of La Via Campesina, the international peasant movement of family farmers, indigenous, and landless people. Paul's talk was titled Farmers and the Global Food Crisis. For listeners on Vancouver Island in the Gulf Islands, you might be interested to learn of an upcoming event taking place on Friday, February 5th. The city of Duncan, British Columbia, will be hosting well-known Saskatchewan farmer and farmers' rights advocate Percy Schmeiser, a familiar voice here on Deconstructing Dinner. Percy will be hosted by the Cowichan Green community, and his talk will be part of 2 days of workshops and panels. And again, that's Percy Schmeiser, Friday, February 5th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Duncan Christian Reformed Church at 930 Trunk Road, Duncan, B.C. More info on the event at cowichangreencommunity.org. Our food system faces many crises, among which is the steady increase in the average age of the North American farmer. As farms have gotten bigger and bigger, and as the business of farming proves less and less attractive, young farmers have become quite an anomaly. The Nova Scotia Federation of Agriculture compiled a startling statistic that is likely not so different anywhere else in North America. With the average age of farmers in the province being 54, and with those farmers maintaining $1.6 billion in farm capital, 70% being in land and buildings, about 50% of this capital will need to be transferred in the next 10 years, when those farmers retire. With such high capital costs for the beginning farmer and an obligation to provide a reasonable source of retirement for the outgoing farmer, some pretty serious concerns face eaters and farmers alike. Part-time farmers and those who are nearing the end of their career may not be able or willing to leverage their operations to the extent required to enable a farm transition. And new entrants and young farmers may not be able to find transition support from either within their operations or from external sources. Canada's National Farmers Union has maintained a strong youth focus throughout its history, and at their 2009 annual convention held in Ottawa this past November, the union's campaign for new farmers was launched. To introduce the campaign was the NFU's new youth president, Kalissa Regeer. Kalissa farms organic mixed grains and oil seeds in Laird, Saskatchewan. In addressing the future of farmers and farming, Kalissa believes that there is no alternative but to find alternatives.
My name is Kalissa Regeer. I've been the youth vice president of the National Farmers Union for the past 3 years, and yesterday was elected as the youth president for the National Farmers Union. Thanks very much for all your attention today. It's really great to be here among a lot of my peers and all of the members that are present here and the board members to launch the campaign for new farmers. Mm-hmm. It was during the NFU youth meeting in July at a fishing lodge on the shores of the Loughborough Lake in Battersea, Ontario, a very alluring place, that the inception for this campaign took place. Now, a conversation between new and young farmers is likely to sound very similar no matter what part of the world you happen to be in. And in the Battersea meeting, the NFU youth, we spend a lot of time discussing our challenges, asking the questions, how can we find adequate access to the things that we need to continue farming? How can we find hope in an industry that and a profession that in the past has been so incredibly hopeless? And most importantly, how can we begin to make a difference? Our conversation was diverse and very well grounded, but it was clear that we needed something to organize around. Not only a platform to base our future work that's needed in the country, but a platform on which we can stand together with our alliances across the country and truly create a united voice for young and beginning farmers in Canada. And so the idea for the Campaign for New Farmers was born, to bring awareness to the country, to educate ourselves, to build bridges with our partners, and most of all, to continue the fight. There's so many forces against new farmers in the world today, it's a wonder that we exist at all. There's a few of us here to prove that we do. The term endangered species is quite suitable when speaking about the elusive creatures that are apparently going to take over the farms of tomorrow. In 2006, when the Ag Census numbers came to us, stating that farmers under 35 had dropped from over 77,000 in 1991 to under 30,000 in 2006, a number of things were not done. Words like crisis and emergency were not used. Agriculture policy was not reformed. And the sheer magnitude of these numbers and what they mean for Canada's food system was not even acknowledged. It was business as usual. Well, the good news is that I'm an optimist, as many of the young people in this room today are as well. And I was happy to keep with the consensus decision at the Battersea meeting to keep the Campaign for New Farmers moving in a hopeful and a positive direction. And indeed, there are many things to be hopeful about. We've seen examples here at convention of opportunities, programs, and exchanges that are contributing to this hope. We've also now met the farmers responsible for this movement. Farmers like Caitlin Hall, Cammie Harbottle and Hilary Moore, Nathan Macklin, who are working against all the odds, sacrificing their financial stability, their social lives, and probably at times their sanity, for the love of what they do. They're making the difference. Our associate members, like Taryn Giacomini and Paul Slomp, are dedicating countless volunteer hours for the sake of what they see as an integral part of their future as well. This hope is evident everywhere, and it was kept close at hand while we developed the core for the campaign. The structure consists of three pillars of work. The first is awareness raising. Without the ability to communicate this message, our work is redundant. So developing a usable interactive website and releasing materials to the general public is critical for this. The second pillar is education, and this includes exchange and succession planning as well. Partnering with existing programs inside and outside Canada will offer the new experiences to our members and an important opportunity to learn from each other as well as the generations before us. But we also need to consider the education that we can provide to others. So this winter we will begin the development of a curriculum for formal submission to the provincial ministries of education for a senior sciences course outlining the different models of agriculture, how they connect to the food system, and the controversial history and politics that they encompass. As well, we will plan to continue the annual youth workshop with National Farmers Union Youth, which has been in the past a great chance to improve our organizational skills and share our farming experiences. The third pillar of the campaign is policy analysis and development, and we're all familiar with that, being a part of the NFU. In order for us to be truly effective, we really need to see the results of our work in our government policy. This is probably the most difficult part of this campaign. But the NFU is known for its intense political analysis, as well as its ability to find meaningful alternatives, and this will need to continue in the future. We recognize that we have been brought to a place, as young farmers, where there is no alternative but to find alternatives. So we will do this. We'll find alternative means of communication, bringing our struggles and successes to the dinner table of every home in Canada. We'll seek out alternative training and education that exists, formal and informal. We'll focus our attention on alternative agriculture policy that acknowledges the importance of having farmers on our farms, that gives credibility to small-scale and local food production, that protects the interests of all farmers through effective supply-managed systems and farmer-led marketing. We'll aim for an agriculture policy that recognizes that the most important natural resource for food production is not seeds, it's not land, it's not water, it's farmers. We'll also commit ourselves. Commit to educate ourselves and our peers. Commit to practice all our alternatives until they become the mainstream. We'll commit to publicize our findings and work together with our partners. We will commit to unifying our voice under this campaign and truly understand the motto, "In union is strength." And finally, we will commit ourselves to tread a new path and work within the understanding that business as usual is not an option. So, in front of you, the members of the 40th anniversary of the National Farmers Union, I am pleased to announce the official launch of the campaign for new farmers.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, and that was Calissa Regeer speaking in November 2009 in Ottawa at the National Farmers Union's annual convention. Calissa is the NFU's youth president. She farms in Laird, Saskatchewan. Also sharing the microphone with Calissa were a number of other young farmers, including Hilary Moore. After graduating from environmental studies at Ottawa's Carleton University, Hilary gained valuable experience on farms in New York and Massachusetts, to later return 6 years ago to Ontario and launch the Teamwork Community Supported Agriculture, or CSA, program at Dunbray Farms in Elmont, Ontario. Hilary spoke of her journey as a young farmer and how she believes young farmers can be supported in the shadows of an aging farm population.
Hi, I'm Hilary Moore. I was asked to be part of this panel basically because of my experience over the past 11 years. So I'm going to go through it. 11 years ago, I apprenticed on a farm in Long Island, New York, after coming out of Carleton University with an armload of frustration about the global food system and the way people treat the earth, etc. I was in an environmental studies program, very depressing program, unless you can find a very optimistic article, which I did, of talking about a system called community-supported agriculture. I was really drawn to the way that that worked and the simplicity and the thoughtfulness behind that structure of farming. And without really giving it two cents of thought, I found myself living in a tent on Long Island, learning how to grow vegetables on a 5-acre market garden scale. They have 200 shareholders that come to the farm every week and actually harvest their own vegetables for the most part, which is kind of a unique way of running that type of farm, but that's another story. Anyways, I fell in love. I found my calling, if you will, quite early on in that experience, and decided to drop out of my master's, which I entered into for 5 days, and pursue farming. And so I spent another year, a full year, apprenticing at another farm, again, down in New England. At the time, living around Ottawa, there wasn't a whole lot. I wasn't breaking in. If there was things happening, I wasn't breaking into that world at all. Fate had me enter into this incredible community of small-scale, sort of alternative farmers in New England, and I'm really happy that I had that experience. So down to Massachusetts, I went for a full-year apprenticeship program, which also, beyond vegetables on a five-scale, or a five-acre scale, we also had a bit of livestock. So through that experience, I learned that I actually really like raising animals, too. So and using horsepower came out of that experience. And then I had the opportunity to use an acre while I was still down there. This is the way I work. I don't think too much about what I'm doing. I just sort of do things and take opportunities come, and I just go forward with them. So opportunity brought me an acre of land to use, still in Massachusetts, and I said, okay, let's go for it. I had a friend who was changing the structure of his CSA, and so I also inherited 20 well-trained CSA families to be my shareholders for that season. So it was a very easy, nurturing way to enter into running my own business. I had a huge amount of support from people who had a lot more experience than I did. I call that experience my master's, actually. and so will my dad to this day. He considers my postgraduate education, the 2 years that I spent farming in other places, which is pretty special to me because it's nice to have, for someone who grew up in Toronto for the most part and whose dad has been selling nails all his life, and he's thinking, wow, you went to university to go out and farm. That's an interesting choice, you know, and a lot of people would agree with that. A lot of parents would agree with that. Just because of the financial viability of farming and the tough work, you know, the amount of work and all that stuff that people try and stray away from. So I had that experience, but I wanted to come home, so I did. And I started farming. I started at a CSA called Teamwork CSA with a good friend named Rob Walbridge. Well, I just met him at the time, but he's a good friend now. Farmed with him for a year, and that situation didn't work out. So I need to find more land. So I had a spiel, and the spiel was knowing what I wanted, first of all. I wanted to be able to build a greenhouse because up till this point I was able to borrow greenhouse space at the locations where I was farming, which was very convenient. Access to water, 2 acres of land, and my membership was in Ottawa, so I needed to be within a reachable distance of Ottawa too. And so put my spiel together, and at an event here in town, I met the first people I talked to, first round with my spiel, was Bruce and Janet Duncan. And that was 7 years ago. So I have been coexisting, I call it, with Bruce and Janet on their farm for the past 7 years, running a 2.5-acre market garden, making a living at it. I've been making a living at it since I was in Massachusetts, to tell you the truth. It was a meager living, but I made it work because I was determined that you have to be able to make a living growing food. It's just the way it has to work. The learning process has not stopped by any sense of the imagination. And if anything, I grow a mean head of lettuce. And I know a lot about growing vegetables by now. But the complexity of farming, the complexity of the changes environmentally, you know, weather-wise, et cetera, that we're facing, the complexity of balancing family, farm, money, personal activities, such as, you know, learning how to sew, which is something I really want to do, all those things just really have emphasized to me the learning curve will never stop. And beyond that, just the, you know, what I've gleaned coexisting with Bruce and Janet has been unstructured knowledge about things like fencing, repairing fencing, climbing up ladders that are uncomfortably high, you know. It's those situations where I think that a lot of learning, informal learning, comes from pushing yourself into those uncomfortable situations. And there is nothing better than having someone there who has been up that ladder before, who has built and repaired that fence 1,000 times, who has been through so many experiences that they can calm you down and they can tell you it's going to be all right. And so that, like, ah, sort of feeling inside is comforted. And from that, you learn. And I feel like now I have something to offer. I've had apprentices, I guess, for 3 years. This year, I actually had she called herself a farm worker, a minion. She empowers the term minion. But anyways, it's semantics, but because she did learn a lot, but she didn't want to have that commitment. But I have had apprentices who have been very seriously pondering the idea of farming, and that's been an interesting learning experience for me also. One, because then that puts me in a teacher role, which I hadn't done before, and so that reaffirms things that I know and don't know. That's an interesting point. But also, it has given me an opportunity to show someone how to use a drill. That's empowering for people. Yeah, it's a big thing. You can come out of university with a piece of paper and you know how to write an essay, but the practical and you know, ideologically, I want to be involved in changing the food system, in empowering the people and all these things, and you just come out with a passion. But it's those simple skills that I think a lot of people probably take for granted that you have in this room, that we all have in this room. Those are the skills that we really need to translate to people that have the passion but don't know how to build the simplest structure or don't know how to repair the simplest thing, don't know how to balance the prioritize, you know, or break away from the square system that we're, you know, the non-farm population is raised up in. You know, you wake up, you go to something, you come home from something, you relax for a while, you go to bed, you wake up again, and you do it all over again. And it's boring, but it's secure, and that's not farming at all. Farming is not boring, and farming is not secure. And so it takes a lot of work to break that program in somebody. And that is something I've learned having apprentices come to the farm and work with me. And it's the most rewarding thing is seeing the change and seeing that stamina build and seeing the sense of empowerment that comes from people, first of all, leaving something at the end of the day and saying, holy cow, look what I just did today. That's pretty impressive. Because that's unique for people also. Anyways, I'm sort of blending the being mentored and the mentoring part because I think that the roles, I think it's a two-way street. And that's what I'm trying to say. And I think that the face of succession farming is changing, of the exchange of knowledge, the passing down of knowledge is changing, because not too many farm kids are staying at home to farm anymore. And the people that are interested in doing it don't have the upbringing or the natural understanding that comes with being brought up in that environment. And so I think that we all, first of all, have a responsibility to acknowledge the incredible amount of skills and knowledge that you have to share, because I think that in my experience, because I'm a talker and I'm not afraid to approach people and ask questions. I'm not afraid to ask for help. I'm not afraid to take help either. And so I've talked to quite a few people, and I get a sense that people really undervalue what they have to offer in the farming community. You know, that is not just an issue with here. I mean, that's in the whole everything we're doing here, we're talking about here. That I think that that's a nucleus where it all comes from. Is we have to take pride in ourselves and what we do and what we know. Even though, you know, it doesn't pay a three-bill figure that tells us that, you know, we know more than somebody else. I guess we need a format, and I'm a big one about informality. But we do need some sort of format for that exchange of knowledge to take place. And there's all sorts of really exciting things, including this new campaign, all sorts of projects that are trying to, not even trying, there's only do and don't do, I think Yoda said, but that's bridging that gap between people with experience and people seeking to gain that experience. And maybe people aren't aware of what's going on, but I highly recommend that you keep your ears peeled, because, I mean, down in Kingston, they're doing some wonderful stuff. There's well, this new campaign, there's other organizations, you know, the Heifer Project is involved with quite a few organizations that are really pushing pushing this bridge, and I think it's really important. But also, I think just encouraging in your own communities, if you see a person that's new from town that looks a little lost and might seem a little green, I mean, you take them under your wing and share something with them, and because there's a culture. Well, anyways, it's a new culture for people, and it's a dying culture. The agricultural world I shouldn't say dying. That's rather pessimistic. I wouldn't say, but we just need to preserve it and embrace it and love it and pass it on in any way, shape, or form that we can. There you go. Thank you.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, and that was Hillary Moore speaking in November 2009 in Ottawa at the National Farmers Union's annual convention. Hillary operates the Teamwork CSA at Dunbury Farms in Elmont, Ontario. If you've missed any of today's broadcast, it is archived online at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the January 7th, 2010 episode. Also located on the page will be additional audio of some of the comments made at the convention by delegates who shared some inspiring thoughts on this important topic of young farmers in Canada. This is Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly radio show and podcast produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY. I'm John Steinman. Today's 160th episode is archived online at deconstructingdinner.ca under the January 7th, 2010 broadcast. The future of new and young farmers and the declining population growing food in Canada was a featured theme at the 2009 convention of Canada's National Farmers Union. And it was only 1 year earlier that a keynote speaker at the NFU's annual convention said this: "As the percent of people growing food decreases, the political power of farmers decreases." End quote. Those words were spoken by Paul Nicholson. Paul is a member of EHNE, the Basque Farmers Union, located in the north of Spain, and he's a member of the International Coordinating Committee of La Via Campesina, the international peasant movement of family farmers, indigenous, and landless people. Paul's talk was titled "Farmers and the Global Food Crisis," and his comments on the diminishing political power of farmers as the number of farmers decreases is a signal to all of us that the people growing our food and feeding the planet are increasingly losing their voice. Paul Nicholson believes that as a response, new alliances need to be formed between farmers and non-farmers alike in order for growth of export-oriented industrial models of food production to be curtailed. Paul Nicholson was recorded in November 2008 at the annual convention of the National Farmers Union in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And introducing Paul is a familiar voice to Deconstructing Dinner, farmer Yan Slomp of Rimby, Alberta.
Paul Nicholson is one of the founding members of La Via Campesina. Since 1993, he has played a key leadership role in his international peasant movement and contributed substantially to the development of the concept of food sovereignty. He is the international representative for the Basque Farmers and Ranchers Union in Spain. He is a member of the International Coordinating Commission of La Via Campesina for the European region, and he has served 8 years as a member of the board of directors of the Coordination Paysanne Européenne, a member organization of La Via Campesina. He has participated in numerous organizational exchanges with peasant organizations in Africa, Asia, and the Americas, and is well positioned in the highlights of the differences and similarities in how food sovereignty is being interpreted and practiced in international developing countries. He has given numerous presentations in international gatherings in India, Mexico, Brazil, France, Mali, and Italy, among other countries, and has significant experience in European agricultural policy. Paul speaks at least 5 languages fluently. He is spokesperson for La Via Campesina. Please help me welcome Paul Mikkelsen.
Thank you, Jan. When I hear those things, I do not believe them, but still. Well, thank you very much to the Canadian NFU for the invitation to me to be here. For me, it's an honor. It's an honor especially because the Canadian NFU has been an organization which has been very solidarian and which has followed a long process of farmer organizational work, of input in ideas and mobilization. So thank you very much, Stuart and Thierry and Jan and Kalisa and so many other delegates from the Canadian NFU who have participated at the international level. So for me, it's special to recognize the value of Canadian NFU at the international level. 16 years ago, there was no family farm expression at international level. There was no voice. And there was certainly no organized farmers' movement at international level to defend our livelihoods, to defend our values, and to defend our way of life. And in an unexpected encounter in Nicaragua, a dozen farmers from different organizations made a declaration, a statement. It was the first statement, in fact, at international level we had done. And there, the president of the NFU, and I remember distinctly that he coined the expression, the need of having a voice as farmers. He was Wayne Easter. So we are going back in history. History is very short, but that's true. The president of the Canadian NFU was there, and he expressed the need for having a family farm voice at international level. And since then, at each decision-making juncture, the NFU has been present. The initial document of food sovereignty was written in a small group of people, and Nettie Weeb was there, one of the pens who were writing that document. And if you read it now, you will see there the ethical values, the values of family farmers coming out very clearly. Terry, on the issue of seeds. In Rome, on the issue of the right to food. There have been many historical moments when Canadian farmers have been present and have been participating not only in conferences, but also in uncomfortable times in the mobilizations, for example, against WTO. So Canadian NFU has been an active founder member in the creation and in the consolidation of Via Campesina. And I think it's useful to see what we've done over the last 15 years, because it hasn't been little. When we started Via Campesina, we started not knowing where we were going, how we were going to achieve this family farm voice. But we knew we had to organize, we knew that we had to unite family farmers from all over the world. And we had to mobilize this expression in a common strategy. So we developed the strategies against the free trade policies. We understood that the struggle was not between countries, was not between farmers, but it was basically against a neoliberal system which was destroying family farm, social, cultural, and the environmental structure and the economical structure. We decided we needed an autonomous and independent movement, a horizontal movement, not a vertical federation, where decisions would be taken through a consensus-building process, never through a vote with winners and losers. And that we are responsible of ourselves, of our present, and of our future. Nobody was going to speak in the name of us. In the organizational process, we have fully incorporated the aspirations of all farmers, men and women, farmers and farm workers, sedentary and nomadic farmers, rich and poor family farmers, and indigenous peoples farmers. We have built a movement which incorporates all those who fight for other agricultural policies, who fight for a peasant or family farm, economic, social, and cultural structure. We have a very active policy of gender parity. And in our last assembly in Maputo, we have men and women launched the campaign against violence against women. Thank you. Explicitly the objective also to achieve a more just relationship in our own organizations. And though we are facing a patriarchal society in the rural community, I believe that we will win in achieving a more just relationship, men and women, in our own organizations and in our own families on the farm. Today, Via Campesina has a membership of 300 million families. It's a vibrant grassroots bottom-up movement. Initially, it was strong in America and in Europe, but today, the strength, the political strength, the numeric strength is coming from Africa and from Asia. It is recognized institutionally as a major political player. In the FAO, we have a direct institutional relationship with the Director General. In all spaces of debate and of political decision, we take part. We don't win yet, but we take part. We're on the table stating what is our requirements, what are our strategies. And what has given us this strength internationally is that we're an authentic movement. We are a real family farm movement. We do not represent a lobby. We do not represent the interests of the transnational corporations. We are cohesive. And food sovereignty unites us not only as farmers or fisher folk, but also social movements, civil citizen movements, urban consumer movements, etc. And it's very remarkable that when you hear a Via Campesina statement, it can be said by an African farmer, a European farmer, an American farmer, an Asian farmer. It's always representing what we are and what we want to believe. And we are also and we are also respected because we mobilize. We mobilize locally and we mobilize internationally. And that is a huge strength. Without doubt, Via Campesina generates hope and solidarity amongst all farmers. And it is a solidarity which comes from the north to the south and from the south to the north, from the rural communities to the urban communities. And that is a powerful strength. It empowers a movement capable of having courage, of going against the current and saying what it should say, because we know we are right. Today, the International Federation of Agricultural Producers, IFAP, I think it was mentioned by Stuart before, those gentlemen represent the agro-export model of agriculture. And clearly, Via Campesina is the movement which expresses the voice and the mobilization for another policy based on a sustainable family farms. And today we have a political opportunity. As Stuart said, the energy crisis, the climatic change crisis, the food crisis, the financial crisis, they're all focusing on the same issue. They're all saying the same thing. It's a crisis of policy. It's a crisis, it's a systemic crisis. And we can say clearly, without being called radical, that's a crisis of capitalism. And today, the policies which we defend of a sustainable agricultural system, which feeds the people, which sustains the planet, is the proposition which is going to be of the future. It is a political opportunity to say that we must change our policies and that food sovereignty is the solution for farmers and urban people alike. For it is the family farms who feed the world. Only 10% of the food produced in the planet is exported from continent. The rest is produced and consumed locally. We family farmers feed the world, and we must believe it, because it's true. It's our legitimacy. That is our social function. We feed the world. It isn't Walmarts who feed the world. They are not the corporations who feed the world. It's we, the family farmers. We feed the world. We need policies which prioritize local markets, producing food with adequate science and technology, with another model of agriculture. It is the industrial agriculture, the corporate-driven agriculture, which is creating the climatic crisis and which is generating hunger in the world. And this year, in the year 2008-2009, there are going to be a further 100 million people who go hungry in the world. And this is the consequence of a model of development, of a model of economy and society, which we have to change. At the same time, it is the sustainable family farm that cools the planet. It is industrial agriculture which is generating 35% of the gas which heats the planet. It's not the family farm model of production. It's the industrial agricultural model of production. The actual model of production, of consumption, of transport, of trade, cause massive damage to environment, to health, and is the main cause of heating of the planet. We need to develop alliances to radically change these policies. Alliances with social movements, with urban movements, over the issue of food, over the issue of climate, issues which are vital for the future of society.
This is Deconstructing Dinner. You're listening to Paul Nicholson speaking in November 2008 in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, at the annual convention of the National Farmers Union. Paul is a member of EHNE, the Basque Farmers Union, located in the north of Spain, and he's a member of the International Coordinating Committee of La Vía Campesina, the international peasant movement of family farmers, indigenous, and landless people. Paul's talk was titled Farmers and the Global Food Crisis, and as he continues, he shares how farmers are coping with our changing food system in Europe. As it appears, the struggle of farmers here in North America is eerily similar to those abroad.
I guess many of you want to know what is happening in Europe. Well, more or less similar than what is happening here, I think. We are more diverse. Okay, we are more diverse. But the crisis is the same. In Europe, every minute, one family farm disappears. Now with the incorporation of Romania, Bulgaria, Poland, the crisis is hitting them, especially in the east of Europe. But our reality too is the same in the sense that we are 3, 4, 5% of the population are farmers, and our political influence is fastly diminishing. And this is another cause for the urgent need of developing alliances, of how to develop alliances. We are now in the middle of a new agricultural policy debate, where they are debating whether to liberalize totally all the policy instruments we have left. Obviously, the milk quota system is being put into question by the main governments, and also they want to follow up on the decoupling of subsidies, which have been a disaster for us. To pay farmers for not working is not logical in any society, is not legitimate in any society, and generates from society towards farmers a mistrust when we try and make alliances. We are farmers and we have a function in society. We are not paid for doing nothing. So, in Europe, we have developed a new Via Campesina movement. We have incorporated the Dutch cereal organization, cereal producers organization, the main Spanish organization, COAG, the Italian organic producers, the Turkish Farmers Federation, and some other smaller organizations into a new organization in Europe, which we call the European Coordination Via Campesina. We made a common statement of who we are, what we want to defend, and what we propose to society. We want agricultural policies which prioritize the European domestic requirements. We are directly opposed against export subsidies. We cannot legitimize export subsidies in a context where that dumping destroys family farms all over the world, but also in Europe. Cheap food prices in origin for farmers means the breaking up of the family farm economic structure. We defend a solidarian agricultural policy, solidarian with its citizens, producing healthy food, local food, solidarian with its farmers, maintaining farmers on the land in the whole of Europe, and solidarian with the farmers of the world, not dumping and not destroying the other farmers' possibilities or remaining farmers. We are against decoupling of subsidies, i.e. we think that subsidies should go to the work, the maintenance of farming, maintenance of a good quality food production, diversely in the context of Europe. We are opposing the free trade agreements, the free trade agendas. We are supporting policies for regional markets and local markets, and we demand that the technology and the science is diverted towards an agroecological model of production, which doesn't mean an organic mode of production. And of course, we maintain our position against GMOs. You know, that has been one of our few victories this last year. GMOs are still de facto a moratorium. Monsanto 810 is still not legal in Europe, and only in certain parts of Spain are GMOs produced. And this year, next year, there are going to be strong mobilizations to try and apply the moratorium for GMOs in Spain too. It's clear, it's very clear. European citizens do not want GMOs. They do not want to see it on the field, and they do not want to eat it, and they do not want to eat animals. We eat GMOs. That is very clear. And the challenges for the future, they were similar. Over this week, we've had an extremely interesting seminar on food sovereignty. And there, the whole issue of local food, of local markets, of regional markets, of developing other systems of relationship with urban communities, that is a huge issue for us. We defend an agriculture which focuses its priority on European requirements, not export. And the role, or especially of the European agricultural policy and the United States policy in the Farm Bill, are destructive to the family farm context all over the world. Second challenge is the role of the transnational corporations. It is clear that the corporations are intervening in the policy-making decision, the decision-making policy arena, in the parliaments, in the governments, in the international institutions. We must dismantle the power of the transnational corporations. This monopoly situation is generating, destroying not only family farms, but it's commodifying all rights, and it's commodifying all relationships between persons. And to dismantle the power of the transnational corporations must be an objective which we have to strategize and see how we can do, not only in one region of the world, perhaps is to focus on certain transnational corporations, perhaps is to focus on decision-making procedures, but it's very clear that today, for example, in the face of the food crisis, what is the proposition of the governments? More trade and more technological packet, more GMOs, second generation, third generation. And of course, that is a corporate-driven proposition. And in face of that, what do we do about the food crisis? Well, there's no answer. And the UN task force is basically the UN plus WTO and the World Bank and these new philanthropic foundations like the Ford, like the Rockefeller, like the Gates Foundation. It's to carry through the whole technological packet, the whole issue of seed control, patents, the whole agro-industrial model of agriculture. And already we're seeing the whole process of speculation now on land buying, on land grabbing. Governments, transnational corporations buying land all over the planet to produce energy, the agro-fuels, and to produce industrialized food. And key in all this intervention of today, I think, is alliances. We've got to think how to generate alliances, how to strengthen not only our voice as farmers, but with our allies develop propositions, strategies, plans of actions. Over the last 10 years, we've participated, all of us, in many social forums, I think. We've had very interesting discussions, but it's not enough. We've got to develop actions together. We've got to put our objectives together. We've got to put objectives, concrete objectives. We're going to do this, and we're going to do this this way. That means we have to identify especially allies who can work with us. At international level, we're working well with the Women's World March. We're working well, especially in some areas, with the Friends of the Earth, with some environmental organizations, with urban social movements, on the issues of food, on the issues of climatic change. We've got to develop our capacity, our knowledge of integrating with us allies so that we can bottom up change these policies. Food sovereignty we're going to achieve from a local global process. It's not going to be decision making on the top by itself. No, it's going to be a process which we're going to achieve locally, and it will build up. And that will be the process where we will start to win spaces, to win capacity to negotiate with governments for changing real policies. And to end, it's strategic for us, I think, that especially the NFFC of the United States, the Canadian National Farmers Union, and the European Coordination Via Campesina are capable of working closer together. We have many commonalities, and we have many positive things to give to Via Campesina, because no doubt the political decisions are being taken in these power centers, and we have a huge responsibility in these power centers to intervene and to influence into decision-making procedures. Thank you very much. And for me, it's been a great honor this week, and I will take the message back to Europe that together we must change. Thank you.
And that was Paul Nicholson speaking in November 2008 in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, at the annual convention of the National Farmers Union. Paul is a member of EHNE, the Basque Farmers Union, located in the north of Spain, and he's a member of the International Coordinating Committee of La Via Campesina, the international peasant movement of family farmers, indigenous, and landless people. Today's episode of Deconstructing Dinner has been archived online at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the January 7th, 2010 episode. And that was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded at Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake. This radio show is provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.